It is a great folly to hope that other men will harmonize with us. I have never hoped this. I have always regarded each man as an independent individual, whom I endeavored to understand with all his peculiarities, but from whom I desired no further sympathy. In this way have I been enabled to converse with every man, and thus alone is produced the knowledge of various characters and the dexterity necessary for the conduct of life. Goethe. Wow. Can you believe that? And of course, when he references man, he means mankind. Humankind. We're all human, by the way. Welcome to Flourish. I'm Diane Planeten, and you're in the right place if you're ready to create an inspired life. And we do so by working on our own personal development so we can be strong role models for those we love and mentor, and strong for our own personal well-being. Build your own strength. We are on the next chapter in Robert Greene's best-selling book called Mastery, and this chapter hit home. As you know, I am a Robert Greene aficionado, but this particular chapter caught me off guard, and I had to take a beat. I had to take a moment because it kind of gave me an insight to humans that I actually hadn't even thought about yet. And the chapter is called See People as They Are. So this is social intelligence on your path to mastery. And he says, often the greatest obstacle to our pursuit of mastery comes from the emotional drain we experience in dealing with the resistance and manipulations of people around us. If we are not careful, our minds become absorbed in endless political intrigues and battles. The principal problem we face in the social arena is our naive tendency to project onto people our emotional needs and desires of the moment. We misread their intentions and react in ways that cause confusion or conflict. Social intelligence is the ability to see people in the most realistic light possible. By moving past our usual self-absorption, we can learn to focus deeply on others, reading their behavior in the moment, seeing what motivates them, and discerning any possible manipulative tendencies. Aha. Navigating smoothly the social environment, we have more time and energy to focus on learning and acquiring skills. Success attained without this intelligence is not true mastery and will not last. Did you just have an aha moment? Success and mastery need you to understand the laws of human nature. And I did a whole series on that, and I'm going to link the playlist in my show notes. But the social intelligence is so important to understand the games people play. But what I want to start with first, before I get into his tips, is what really hit home to me and why I had to take a moment. That's why there wasn't a show last week. I really had to take a moment and get into some deep thought about this. And you hear this over and over and over again about your childhood, how childhood trauma, childhood experiences, childhood positive and negative interactions impact us as we grow older. So, what does he have to say about childhood? Compared to other animals, we humans enter the world remarkably weak and helpless. We remain relatively weak for many years before we can truly operate on our own. This extended period of immaturity, lasting some 12 to 18 years, serves a valuable function. It gives us a chance to focus on developing our brain, by far the most important weapon in the human arsenal. But this prolonged childhood comes with a price. During this time of weakness and dependency, we experience the need to idealize our parents. Our survival depends on their strength and reliability, to think of them as having their own frailties, would fill us with unbearable anxiety. And so we inevitably see them as stronger, more capable, and more selfless than they are in reality. We come to view their actions through the lens of our needs, and so they become extensions of ourselves. That is why it is super important that if you're mentoring, if you're raising a child, if you even have an employee that you need to give guidance to, parent them, parent yourself, whatever that takes. And why this really hit home to me is, as if you're a usual watcher of the channel, you have heard me speak of my parents and their situation with Alzheimer's and dementia. That right there just explained why I struggle so hard with how frail they are. Right there. It's just like, I have to stop now because I'm going to cry now. So I just really wanted to share that, because wherever you are in your life, wherever, keep this in mind. It's a game changer. All right, let's get to his helpful hints. His first tip is to know that you can discard your naive perspective. What does he say about that? The naive perspective makes us feel sensitive and vulnerable. Looking inward as to how the words and actions of others implicate us in some way, we continually misread their intentions. We project our own feelings onto them. We have no real sense of what they are thinking or what motivates them. With the inevitable mistakes we make, we become entangled in battles and dramas that consume our minds and distract us from learning. Our sense of priorities become warped. We end up giving far too much importance to social and political issues because we are not handling them well. People who retain their childish attitudes will rarely be able to hold on to the success they may achieve through their talent. Social intelligence is nothing more than the process of discarding naive perspective and approaching something more realistic. It involves focusing our attention outward instead of inward, honing the observational and empathetic skills that we naturally possess. It means moving past our tendencies to idealize and demonize people and seeing and accepting them as they are. It is a way of thinking that must be cultivated as early as possible during the apprenticeship phase. But before we can begin to acquire this intelligence, we must first come to grips with the naive perspective itself. And he gives the example in the book about Benjamin Franklin. Yes, we all know who he is. But did you know he wasn't always socially intelligent? He had to go from being a charmer to understanding people better. And Robert Greene says, to be truly charming and socially effective, you have to understand people, and to understand them, you have to get outside yourself and immerse your mind in that world. Only when Benjamin Franklin realized how deeply naive he had been could he take the necessary steps to move past this naivety. His focus on gaining social intelligence was a turning point of his career, It transformed him into a preeminent observer of human nature, a man with magic ability to see into people. It also made him the perfect social companion. Men and women everywhere fell under his spell because of his ability to attune himself to their energies. With tranquil and productive social relations, he could focus more of his time and attention to writing, to questions of science, and to his endless inventions, to mastery. Understand, you will continue to have problems in attaining social intelligence until you come to the realization that your view of people is dominated by the naive perspective. You can reach this awareness by reviewing your past, paying particular attention to any battles, mistakes, tensions, or disappointments on the social front, If you look at these events through the lens of the naive perspective, you will focus only on what other people have done to you, the mistreatments you endured from them, the slights or injuries you felt. Instead, you must turn this around and begin with yourself, how you saw in others qualities they did not possess, or how you ignored signs of a dark side to their nature. In doing this, you will be able to clearly see the discrepancies between your illusions about who they are and the reality and the role you played in creating this discrepancy. And that's just a wake-up call to be aware that people just might have ulterior motives. They're looking out for their best efforts. They don't know you. They don't know what you're thinking. Nobody knows what you're thinking but you. And that imagination is so powerful, it becomes your reality. But it's not. When you kind of get to looking, oh, that person has a dark side. Oh, that person is wearing a mask. Oh, that leopard's not changing its spots. This is powerful stuff and a game changer. And consume it over and over and over again until you really become a super social awareness guru. But how do we do this? Well, Robert Greene says, you cannot change people at their core, but must merely avoid becoming their victim. You are an observer of the human comedy, and by being as tolerant as possible, you gain a much greater ability to understand people and to influence their behavior when necessary. This intelligence consists of two components, both equally important to master. First, there is what we shall call specific knowledge of human nature, namely the ability to read people and get a feel for how they see the world and to understand their individuality. Second, there is a general knowledge of human nature, which means accumulating an understanding of the overall patterns of human behavior that transcend us as individuals, including some of the darker qualities we often disregard. Because we are all a mix of unique qualities and traits common to our species, only the possession of both forms of knowledge can give you a complete picture of the people around you. Practice both forms of knowledge, and they will yield invaluable skills that are essential in the quest for mastery. Let's break it down. First, specific knowledge, reading people. How do you do that? He says, to begin this process, you need to train yourself to pay less attention to the words that people say and greater attention to their tone of voice, the look in their eye, their body language, all signals that might reveal a nervousness or excitement that's not expressed verbally. If you can get people to become emotional, they will reveal a lot more. When you drop your defense mechanisms and pay deep attention to others, you will need to lower your guard and open yourself up to their influence as well. But as long as your emotions and empathy are directed outward, you'll be able to detach yourself when necessary and analyze what you have gleaned. Resist the temptation to interpret what they say or do as somehow implicitly involving you. This will cause you to turn your thoughts inward and close off the immediacy of the connection. Being able to place yourself to a degree in the mindset of others is a brilliant means of loosening up your own thought process, which will tend to get locked into certain ways of seeing things. Your ability to empathize with others is related to the creative process of feeling your way into the subject you are studying. Yes, this intuitive form of reading people becomes more effective and accurate the more you use it. But it is best to combine it with other, more conscious forms of observation. For instance, you should take particular note of people's actions and decisions. Your goal is to figure out the hidden motives behind them, which will often revolve around power. People will say all kinds of things about their motives and intentions. They are used to dressing things up with words. Their actions, however, say much more about what is going on underneath the surface. If they present a harmless front, but they have acted aggressively on several occasions, give the knowledge of that aggression much greater weight than the surface they present. In a similar vein, you should take special note of how people respond to stressful situations. Often the mask they wear in public falls off in the heat of the moment. It goes on to say, when looking for cues to observe, you should be sensitive to any kind of extreme behavior on their part. For instance, a blustery front, an overly friendly manner, a constant penchant for jokes. You will often notice that they wear this like a mask to hide the opposite, to distract others from the truth. They are blustery because they are inwardly very insecure. They are overly friendly because they are secretly ambitious and aggressive. Or they joke to hide a mean-spiritedness. I like that. In the end, he says, your goal is to identify and pierce through to what makes people unique, to understand the character and values that lie at their core. The more you can fathom about people's past and their way of thinking about things, the more deeply you can enter into their spirit. In this way, you'll be able to understand their motivations, foresee their actions, and recognize how best to win them to your side. You will no longer be operating in the dark. And if you get nothing else out of that, just remember, when your values are clear, your decisions are easy. What do you value most? Wrap your decisions around that. Just wrap your head around, what do I value most? Where is my integrity? Where are my ethics? Am I poised? Am I keeping my head up high with confidence and grace? Think about it. Cool. Reading people, number one. All right, what's number two? Well, second, he says, is general knowledge, the seven deadly realities. I love this. Most of us have these negative qualities: envy, conformism, rigidity, self-obsessiveness, laziness, flightiness, and passive aggression. In relatively mild doses, but in a group setting, there will inevitably be people who have one or more of these qualities to a high enough degree that they can become very destructive. We shall call these negative qualities the seven deadly realities. The problem for us is that people do not like to display these traits publicly because they are seen as ugly and undesirable. They tend to disguise them from view, finally revealing their reality through some action that blindsides and harms us. In our surprise, we tend to react emotionally, increasing the damage, the effects of which can carry with us the rest of our lives. Through study and observation, we must understand the nature of these seven deadly realities so that we can detect their presence and avoid triggering them in the first place. All right, are you ready? Are you ready to break this down? Number one, envy. Yeah, that one's a big one, and I'm just going to quote Eleanor Roosevelt quickly. Comparison is the thief of joy. Comparison is a thief of joy. That's why envy rears its ugly head. And he says, it is our nature to constantly compare ourselves to others in terms of money, looks, coolness, intelligence, popularity, or any number of categories. Intelligence is the most sensitive trigger point for envy. Ooh, did you know that? I didn't know that. In general, it is by standing out too much that you will spark this ugly emotion. And so it's best to maintain a non-threatening exterior and to blend in well with the group, at least until you're so successful it no longer matters. I love that. Conformism. When people form groups of any type, a kind of organizational mindset inevitably sets in. Although members of the group might trumpet their tolerance and celebration of people's differences, The reality is that those who are markedly different make them feel uncomfortable and insecure, calling the values of the dominant culture into question. This culture will have unwritten standards of correctness that shift with the times we live in. Beware the downward pull of the group. Yes. In some environments, physical appearance is important. But generally, the spirit of correctness runs deeper than that, often unconsciously conforming to the spirit of man or woman on top. Members will share the same values about morals or politics. You can become aware of this group spirit by observing how much people feel the need to display certain opinions or ideas that conform to the standards. There will always be a few within the group who are the overseers of correctness and who can be quite dangerous. Yes, he said dangerous. All right, next, rigidity. The world has become increasingly complex in many ways. And whenever we humans face a situation that seems complicated, our response is to resort to a kind of artificial simplicity, to create habits and routines that give us a sense of control. We prefer what is familiar, ideas, faces, procedures, because they are comforting. This extends to the group at large. People follow procedures without really knowing why, simply because these procedures may have worked in the past, and they become highly defensive if their ways are brought into question. They become hooked on certain ideas and they hold on to it, even if that idea has been proven repeatedly wrong. It is useless to fight against people's rigid ways or to argue against their irrational concepts. You will only waste time and make yourself rigid in the process. The best strategy is to simply accept rigidity in others, outwardly display defense to their need for order. On your own, however, you must work to maintain your open spirit, letting go of bad habits and deliberately cultivating new ideas. Indeed, cultivate new ideas. Let go of those bad habits. Even if those bad habits you have to whittle away at just a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time, and we all have them. There's no one who is immune from that. Don't believe that for one second. Do not compare yourself. Thief of joy, remember? All right, what's next? Self-obsessiveness. In the work environment, we almost inevitably think first and foremost of ourselves. The world is a harsh and competitive place, and we must look after our own interests. Self-interest does not make us feel or appear noble. Many people go out of their way to disguise their self-interest. Instead of putting yourself in this position, you must understand and accept this deadly reality. When it is time to ask for a favor or help, you must think first of appealing to people's self-interest in some way. He says you should apply this to everyone, no matter their level of self-obsessiveness. You must look at the world through their eyes, getting a sense of their needs. You must give them something valuable in exchange for helping you, a return favor that will save them time, a contact they need, and so on. In general, in your interactions with people, find a way to make the conversations revolve around them and their interests, all of which will go far to winning them to your side. I'm going to add one little caveat that it's not just about business, because to me, business is personal, but it's about the dynamics in all of your interactions in life. What's happening at school? What's happening at home? What's happening in your relationship? So many dynamics, but if you can embrace it and observe and stay calm and not get emotional, it'll make a difference. Oh, it'll make such a difference. Next, laziness. We all have the tendency to want to take the quickest, easiest path to our goals, but we generally manage to control our impatience. We understand the superior value of getting what we want through hard work. For some people, however, this lazy streak is far too powerful. Discouraged by the thought that it might take months or years to get somewhere, they are constantly on the lookout for shortcuts. Their laziness will assume many insidious forms. Your best defense is your prudence. Keep your ideas to yourself or conceal enough of the details so it's not possible for others to steal them. If you are doing work for a superior, be prepared for them to take the full credit and leave your name out of this. For example, if you're not careful and talk too much, they will steal your best ideas and make them your own, saving themselves all the mental effort that went into conceiving them. They will swoop in during the middle of your project and put their name on it, gaining partial credit for your work. They will engage you in a collaboration in which you do the bulk of the hard work, but they share equally in the rewards. Your best defense is prudence. Does this sound familiar? Oh, been there, done that. Next, flightiness. We like to make a show of how much our decisions are based on rational considerations. But the truth is that we are largely governed by our emotions, which continually color our perception. What this means is that people around you, constantly under the pull of their emotions, change their ideas by the day or by the hour, depending on their mood. Focus on their actions, which are generally more consistent, and not on their words. Do not take so seriously people's promises or their ardor in wanting to help you. If they come through, so much the better. But be prepared for the more frequent change of heart, relying upon yourself to get things done, and you will not be disappointed. My rule of thumb, because I can identify one of those flighty people in a heartbeat, I simply stick to myself and do what I say I'm going to do. It's that simple. And if you are struggling with the laziness or coming across flighty people who you thought you could rely upon, forget about it. Do what you say you're going to do, and you will shine. You will outshine the stars. It is one little rule that's part of my value pack, right? The values I talked about earlier. Think about your values. It makes a difference. And then next, passive aggression. Oh, these people are exhausting, right? The root cause of all passive aggression is the human fear of direct confrontation. The emotions that a conflict can churn up and the loss of control that ensues. And so, because of this fear, some people look for indirect means for getting their way, making their attack subtle enough so it's hard to figure out what's going on while giving them control in the dynamic. This is the leopard that doesn't change its spots. But there are people out there seething with insecurities who are veritable passive-aggressive warriors and can literally ruin your life. Yikes. This is also the person who cries wolf a lot, right? They say one thing, you're like, ah, drama, and then it doesn't transpire. They're pulling your strings. They are. They're treating you like a little puppet, and then they'll do it again and again and again. And there's a I don't know if it's a folktale, but it's all about the boy who cried wolf. And he cried wolf one too many times. Oh, can you identify with that? That is the person that is not on your side. All right. He goes on to say, your best defense is to recognize such types before you become embroiled in a battle and avoid them like the plague. The most obvious clues come from their track record. They have a reputation. You hear stories of past skirmishes and so on. At all costs, avoid entangling yourself emotionally in their dramas and battles. They are masters at controlling the dynamic, and you will almost always lose in the end. Wow. You are not a victim. You are not a victim. You are not a victim. You are in control of yourself. These people do not ask me why, exist in your life right in front of your face, right in front of your face. And by mastering this social intelligence, you're going to change your life around. You are. You're going to be like, oh, they're that. Okay. I'll go this way instead. And you know, sometimes it's work colleagues or family that you literally cannot avoid. But if you can inform yourself on how to deal with that situation, oh, now you're in the power position and they're not, because you're not a victim, right? That was the seven deadly realities. Yikes. But if you're aware of them, superpowers. You have a superpower now. Developing social intelligence, he says, will not simply help you manage your relations with other people. Acquiring it will also have an immensely beneficial effect on your ways of thinking and your creativity in general. Understand, the human brain is an interconnected organ, which is in turn interconnected with our bodies. To develop your intellectual powers at the expense of the social is to retard your own progress to mastery, meaning holding you back, and limit the full range of your creative powers. So how do we move forward? Well, you are not going to believe this. So he has some strategies for acquiring this social intelligence, and there's four. And he says, in dealing with people, you will often encounter particular problems that will tend to make you emotional and lock you into the naive perspective. Such problems include unexpected political matters, superficial judgments of your character based on appearance, or petty-minded criticisms of your work. The following four essential strategies developed by masters past and present will help you meet these inevitable challenges and maintain the rational mind necessary for social intelligence. Number one, speak through your work. Understand, your work is the single greatest means at your disposal for expressing your social intelligence. By being efficient and detail-oriented in what you do, you demonstrate that you are thinking of the group at large and advancing its cause. By making what you write or present clear and easy to follow, you show your care for the audience or public at large. By involving other people in your projects and gracefully accepting their feedback, you reveal your comfort with the group dynamic. Work that is solid also protects you from the political conniving and malevolence of others. It is hard to argue with the results you produce. If you're experiencing the pressures of political maneuvering within the group, do not lose your head and become consumed with all the pettiness. By remaining focused and speaking socially through your work, you will both continue to raise your skill level and stand out among all others who make a lot of noise but produce nothing. Yeah. Second strategy. Craft the appropriate persona. Understand, people will tend to judge you based on your outward appearance. If you're not careful and simply assume that it is best to be yourself, they will begin to ascribe to you all kinds of qualities that have little to do with who you are, but correspond to what they want to see. You must see the creation as a persona, as a key element in social intelligence, not something evil or demonic. We all wear masks in the social arena, playing different roles to suit the different environments we pass through. You are simply becoming more conscious of the process. Think of it as theater. By creating a persona that is mysterious, intriguing, and masterful, you are playing to the public, giving them something compelling and pleasurable to witness. You're allowing them to project their fantasies onto you or directing their attention to other theatrical qualities. In your private life, you can let that mask fall. In this diverse, multicultural world, It is best that you learn how to mingle and blend into all types of environments, giving yourself maximum flexibility. You must take pleasure in creating these personas. It will make you a better performer on the public stage. And you do need to be yourself. You have a quirky uniqueness that never, ever will be created again. But this is great advice about how to make a bit of a chameleon out of yourself in different situations, reading the crowd, reading the group, reading the situation, and then morphing into it. Like he gave us that great example in the beginning of the chapter about Benjamin Franklin and how he honed his social intelligence. And I can only imagine in the Renaissance era, when everyone was at court, all the politicking that went on, create that theater, change when you need to in order to make things work for you. That's how you avoid these bullies out there, these passive-aggressive people that just want to manipulate you. Let them go. Avoid them at all costs, right? Next, number three strategy. See yourself as others see you. What does that mean, do you think? He says, we can begin this process by looking at negative events in our past. People sabotaging our work, bosses firing us for no logical reason, nasty personal battles with colleagues. It is best to start with events that are at least several months old and that's not emotionally charged. In dissecting these occurrences, we must focus on what we did that either triggered or worsened the dynamic. In looking at several such incidents, we might begin to see a pattern that indicates a particular flaw in our character. Seeing the events from the perspective of the other people involved will loosen the lock our emotions have on our self-image and help us understand the role we play in our own mistakes. We can also elicit opinions from those we trust about our behavior, making certain to first reassure them that we want their criticisms. Slowly in this way, we can develop increasing self-detachment, which will yield us the other half of social intelligence, the ability to see ourselves as we really are. The ability to see ourselves as we really are. Now, don't be too hard on yourself. But if you're struggling right now as a result of what you're surrounding yourself with, and if you have a child, oh, man, they are a reflection of you through and through. So if you are struggling, your child's struggling, or your student's struggling, or who you're mentoring struggling, or your employees are struggling, you need to raise the game. Raise the game. I'm just saying, it's interesting how we mirror one another. And number four, suffer fools gladly. I love this one. Suffer fools gladly. In the course of your life, you will be continually encountering fools. There are simply too many to avoid. In dealing with fools, you must adopt the following philosophy. They are simply a part of life, like rocks or furniture. All of us have foolish sides, moments in which we lose our heads and think more of our ego or short-term goals. It is human nature. Seeing this foolishness within you, you can then accept it in others. This will allow you to smile at their antics, to tolerate their presence as you would a silly child, and to avoid the madness of trying to change them. It is all part of the human comedy, and it is nothing to get upset about or lose sleep over. This attitude, suffer fools gladly, should be forged in your apprenticeship phase, during which you are almost certainly going to encounter this type. If they are causing you trouble, you must neutralize the harm they do by keeping a steady eye on your goals and what is important and ignoring them. The height of wisdom, however, is to take this even further and to actually exploit their foolishness, using them for material for your work, as examples of things to avoid, or by looking for ways to turn their actions to your advantage. In this way, their foolishness plays into your hands, helping you achieve the kind of practical results they seem to disdain. Your conscious attempt to opt out of this system will retard your apprenticeship in social intelligence and can make you vulnerable to the worst forms of naivety, with all the disasters that are likely to ensue. Yes, it will hold you back. So, was that not the most enlightening, enlightening chapter ever? I am digging this book, and I would love it if you could give me a like, a comment, a subscribe. You do not want to miss the next chapter. This is exciting stuff, and this is open to everyone in the world. So if you like the show, share it with somebody you know. And hey, I can hardly wait to share the next chapter. This is enlightening. Awaken the dimensional mind, the creative, active. Oh, are you curious? I'll see you then.